This is the one with a doctor doppelganger.
Shifty Europeans.
Fake Australians.
Genocide volcanoes.
Subterranean idiots.
And groovy pajamas.
It's called The Enemy of the World.
Here we go.
We're embarking on a voyage all through time and all through space, counting Daleks, Thal and Oot, and the Cybertronic race. Sontarans look like taters, and Silurians all have wonky scales. And the Doctor has a TARDIS, we're reviewing all his tales. Who back when? Reviewing all of who there is. Who back when? Subscribe and rate on iTunes, please. Episode by episode, we're trudging down this temporal road. Come join us on this odyssey. What other choice could there be than who back when? Who Back When.
Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to another episode of Who Back When, a Doctor Who podcast.
Or Doc Past.
You join us today on
C040.
Classics. The Enemy of the World.
God damn right it is.
Yeah.
And 40 classics, man.
I know.
40
right?
classics.
I'm excited as you are.
I can see.
As you can already hear, I'm Nicola Lely, and I'm joined by the one and only Ponkin.
That's me. Hey, Nick.
Hey. So I think, unless there's any housekeeping, we should jump into a bite-sized chunk of Who.
Oh my goodness, do let's. Bite-sized chunk
of Who. Doc, Jamie, and Victoria materialise by the sea and are immediately chased by a hovercraft full of, one presumes, drunken Aussies.
Turns out Doc has been mistaken for Salamander, the inexplicably malevolent would-be dictator of the world with the uncanny ability to predict seismic activities.
Doc must now decide whether to side with the rebels, impersonate the dictator, defend the Salamander, or get the shit out of there.
Hilarity ensues!
You are welcome.
Beeskow over.
Wrong way round.
Okay, dokie. Okay, actually, let's say something before we start off. This is a 6-episode arc, and it is in no way lost. This is a completely intact serial. So, ladies and gentlemen of podcast land, you can, if you haven't bought this on DVD or downloaded it off iTunes, you can actually find the whole serial on Daily Motion.
In fantastic quality.
In amazing quality, yeah. And one more thing, this isn't really trivia in any, well, I guess maybe qualifies as trivia. We have had one serial before in which the Doctor, as in the actor playing the Doctor, also plays someone else in the same serial. It's not the last time either, but the first time was a Hartnell serial.
Which one? I'm struggling to remember.
I'm glad you asked. Let me tell you. It was the Massacre of St. Bartholomew's Eve, in which William Hartnell played not only the first Doctor, but also the Abbot of Amboise.
Ah.
And Troughton does a far better job of it here. But also, like, his alter ego, or the other character that he plays, is a much more fleshed-out character.
So, should we start off with the open?
Oh my god, let's do it.
Let's do it.
Let's just open up, man.
Yeah, what are we calling this? A hot open? Hot? We're coming in hot.
Well, we are coming in hot. Do you know what the opening made me think of?
Go on.
The cold open, or hot open, whatever you want to call it, the cold open of the James Bond film On Her Majesty's Secret Service, where, what's his face? Who played Bond? What was his name? Lazenbeam. Lazerbeam! George Lazerbeam. Where George Lazerbeam...
You just hit reds. You hit reds with George Lazerbeam.
Yeah, that's because I'm so excited by George Lazerbeam. George Lazerbeam is on the beach and immediately fights these grunts.
Yeah.
Yeah?
And that won't be the only Bond reference in this 6-parter, I imagine.
It certainly will not.
Not according to my notes. Okay, so we're on the beach. Doc, Vic and Jamie are having a great time. Doc gets naked.
Well, he gets into his long johns. Turns out he wears them under his trousers.
See, I was watching from afar from my laptop, and it looked like he got naked. So in my head, the dog got naked.
Yeah, okay. Yeah. Right, good for you.
I went for a skinny dip, which is nice.
In his long johns.
Yeah. My first note is, how good does Victoria look in tartan?
Oh, well, she's worn tartan for a while now, hasn't she?
Yeah, but I just, in the brightness of this particular, you can't always tell with the recons and the animated ones.
Yeah, no,
particularly
she looks all right.
Whatever,
Okay, here's my 2 cents about Victoria's appearance, as in general.
Mm.
According to her publicity stills, she was a stone-cold fox, but in the actual show, she's increasingly meh.
Absolutely not. Super stone-cold fox. Crazy Victorian fox.
All right. Agree to disagree.
Just wrong.
Also,
Jamie's looking pretty fine, too.
Oh, Jamie's in top form.
Yeah, he's been working out.
Hey, okay, question about Jamie. And I'm sorry, we should not be digressing, because we actually said before pressing record that we should keep this very tight. But I've got a question. You brought up the tartan that she's wearing. Do you think Jamie's in any way offended?
No, I think that's him planting his flag.
Oh, he's been there.
Yeah.
I think that's Jay's
it.
Mean that.
I think that's it. He leaves Tartan wherever he goes. I think that's the only conclusion we could all logic.
That's a solid theory.
Yeah.
Okay.
Okay, so they're running for their lives for no apparent reason from the... We're introduced to three men on the most 70s hovercraft I've ever seen.
Yeah, and is it not one of the most amazing hovercrafts?
I mean, all hovercrafts look 70s. Which is fantastic.
We're still in the late 60s, by the way.
Oh, so, yes.
Same difference. But I feel like hovercrafts were kind of a big deal in BBC TV around this era.
They absolutely. No, but they were just in Britain in general. Like,
oh,
we
really?
Thought that this was the technology that of came in. So I'm from a city called Portsmouth, where there is a giant, I'm not even sure if it's still in operation, but a hovercraft that would take you to the Isle of Wight. And we used to stand in awe of this thing, which would get you to the Isle of Wight 10 minutes quicker than the conventional boat. But everyone realized that hovercrafts don't work in pretty much every type of weather.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, it's too sunny, you can't use the hovercraft.
Wasn't there a hovercraft in the original version of The Prisoner?
Yeah, that sounds about right.
I feel like there was one.
That sounds about right.
That's sort of the same era. Maybe Prisoner was early 70s, late 60s, early 70s.
It's all got a very similar vibe to it.
Exactly,
it?
Yeah. Right?
But yeah, so we're supposed to, I think, watching it in the 60s, take from the hovercraft that we're in the future.
We are.
Hovercrafts are just, you just hang out with your buddies on your hovercraft.
Except for Portsmouth, only the future of any country. Well, we'll see. But it's not that they're running for no reason whatsoever. There are three chaps in the hovercraft. They see the Doctor.
Yes.
And pretty much immediately start chasing after them and firing at them.
Well, see, this is one of my first big notes that I think we should talk about for a little second is the amount of intrigue generated in this first scene was overwhelming for me. I'm just like, they're obviously looking at Troughton, looking at the Doc and saying, there he is.
It could be.
Yeah. We're going to take him. We're going to, murder him. He's like, who the fuck is the... In my head, immediately went to, the Doc has been here and done some fucked up stuff. Like, he's come here and done, like, war criminal type stuff.
I can see how you'd get to that. Yeah, but unfortunately, I already knew that he was going to play two characters in this.
No,
and I knew that too.
Oh,
this
like,
is a... They're thinking that that's the, you know...
No, I
the
knew,
Spanish dude
I said,
or
I knew
the
that
Mexican
too,
dude.
But I also...
Sorry.
I also just... I inhabited my inner child for a second.
Oh, sure.
Like, that could have been a cool twist. The Doctor paying for crimes of the future.
My first note about them is Luger, gun of the future.
Short range gun of the future. Fired over many miles is super ineffectual.
Not making the sound of an actual gun. And only later managing to, like, break something. Because it seems as though another note of mine here is I don't think that they're actually firing bullets.
No, well, yes, I have two notes here. One says, future bullets sound shit.
Yeah, checks out.
And the other one is the worst marksmen in the world.
I've written, okay, seriously, check this out. Anton and Co. are the worst shots ever. Also, I feel like they don't fire bullets.
Having said that, we do find out that they're fairly capable marksmen.
Oh, very capable.
Yeah. So without going into too much detail around this side, They're on the run and they get rescued by a lady
called Astrid. And we've missed the opening shot of Astrid, which occurs 2 minutes and 47 seconds in, Mr. Skin. And it's an ass shot.
I've got gratuitous Jodhpur ass shot.
Yeah, and I also mentioned Jodhpurs in my... I've got ass shot of Astrid and possibly, although it seems ahead of its time, the outline of a thong.
Let's definitely put a screen cap on the website.
Miriam is in the audience and sighing audibly. Sorry, Miriam. But I mean... Okay, I think this is still the first indication of what is going to be almost a running theme, at least for me, that the BBC, like the costume department, did an insanely good job in this one.
A really good. Well, we're in an era where fashion in England was leading the world, I think. So, like,
yeah,
maybe
but I mean,
just
compare this to previous Doctor Who serials.
Oh, yeah, no.
Where, like, everyone in the future is just wearing the same foam thing. Yeah. Whereas here, it's like, there seems like some thought has been put into it. Like,
that's
she's
true.
Wearing this weird Napoleonic latex coat, and she's sporting jodhpurs, and she's, like, there's something militaristic about it. There's something.
The costume department definitely did a fucking number on this serial. There are several amazing costumes that we'll run through at this point.
Yeah.
From the ridiculous to the marvelous.
Yeah.
So, okay, Astrid turns up in a micro light deal and rescues them all. And yeah, one of my notes is, will that micro light carry everyone? Doesn't seem like that big of a fucking helicopter.
Can I pull up a soundbite? I'm sorry, I've got my notes in slightly the wrong order. But before they go into the helicopter, there's a quote from the Doctor which really feels like it's very New Who-y, in which he says,
"They're human beings, if that's what you mean, indulging their favourite pastime of trying to destroy each other."
Yeah. Super New Who, he writes.
Yeah, yeah.
It feels like something that Capaldi would say, that Tennant would say, certainly.
Yes, but then I think that the problem, you know, I imagine we'll come up with some other doctors saying similar things, because it's very true.
Okay, it is very true.
If you were an alien coming down, visiting, it's like, you guys kill each other a lot, hey guys?
Yeah. Jamie, by the way, proves that he's really good at it as well. He, like, massively Jason Statham's one of the Antons.
That's true. So we're in the Microlight, we get a little clue as to what time period this is supposed to be in the future.
What is it? Oh yeah, we see this little sign of the helicopter.
Yeah, like it needs a service in 2018 or something.
Yeah, exactly.
So like that, I was like, ooh, that's a fun clue. Then I thought, well,
that's in 2 years.
Yeah, no, but it depends. Yeah, 2 years from now. So yeah, one of my notes is, wow, shit, circa 2016. But more than that, I thought, that's really shoddy as a clue, actually, because how often do these microlights need to be serviced? Is this 2010? Is this 1998? How long?
Oh, that's a good... Later on, we also get to see a newspaper clipping, which is from 2017.
Oh, okay. Mm. Right, there you go. So maybe they're serviced every year.
Yeah. Just in case, they're pretty good at it.
Just in case any of our Whobackwinians have their own microlight every year, guys.
By the way, a piece of trivia in the... I read this online. In the novelization of this story, apparently this is set in the year 2030. They just transposed it an additional 12 to 13 years. Not sure why.
Where?
Okay, well, let's move on. What happens next?
Okay, so we're back at their bungalow, or Astrid's bungalow, and she's giving them a little debrief, but like the most mysterious debrief of all time.
Yeah.
As to why those people want to kill her, or kill them, in fact. It's like, you look like someone. Who are you? I'm the doctor. The doctor of what? Doctor of law? Doctor of... And I thought that was quite nice, actually.
Yeah, I liked it as well.
And I really liked the phrase "determined to be mysterious."
Yes,
that's a really good coinage for what this show, this serial is trying to be,
The
Doctor, yeah. Absolutely determined to be mysterious, and it was a great coinage.
Yeah. Yeah, good coinage, man.
Great coinage.
We're also introduced to Giles Kent, whom I've got down as English Bruce Willis in my notes, because he looks exactly like him.
That's true. That's true. I'm sorry. That took me a second. Again. Oh, also, I've just got randomly Cardinal Richelieu or Van Dyke. That's all I've got. That's the only note. I'm pretty sure.
I know exactly
your...
that. Those are the Antons. There's one of the Antons who has the Cardinal Richelieu, like, just facial hair.
The Van Dyke, yeah, the Van Dyke beard. And he buys it in spectacular fashion, which is great.
Yes, he does. Okay, so English Bruce Willis, anyway, he treats the Doctor and Vijay to a video of Salamander. And Salamander is, as we mentioned in The Beast Cow, he's this politician, I guess, / scientist, who is an aspiring dictator. He actually invented some machine called the Sun Store, which I'm not entirely sure. I don't think they really explain what it does. I mean, it says it harnesses solar energy to, like, increase the yield of crops.
Well, I think the idea, or I can't remember what it's exactly, is, yes, to harness the sun to redistribute it. So we're like, the fields of Canada are now plentiful, and here are these the alien fields over here. They get sun now. It's like, you know, sun's not really been our problem. It's more water, dude.
Yeah.
Water would have been fucking great. We could have sorted out water. It would probably be right.
But so he's built this sun store, and he's also launched 10,000 robot harvesters somewhere. But clearly, there are, you know, there seem to be benefits to be had here. You know, people are no longer starving as a result of his work.
And that's where, you know, there's a bit of a dichotomy as to whether we think he's bad or not, or whether Doug thinks he's bad or not.
Yeah.
But I'm going to put a little pin in, well, not a pin in, but I'm going to just pop out the Salamander as a fucking name.
Okay, I've got him down as Scaramanga, by the
way. That's what I've got.
Oh, no way.
I've got Salamander, Salamanca, but no, I meant Scaramanga. Yeah. Auto-corrected. But that's just another Bond thing, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Another Bond guy that control fucking volcanoes and is mysterious, you know, and the UN loves him. Oh, the UN loves him. Actually, I've got another note here saying it's really weird to see a new UN building.
Oh, yeah.
VT that they show. Have the Aussies bought it yet?
There's been, like, a firefight, yes. Right? Because they've chased them to the place. Oh, by the way, we didn't say, like, the helicopter got hit.
Well,
and it's leaking oil or whatever.
This is what I meant to say.
So we know that someone is actually going to, like, the helicopter is about to blow up. But they disembark, obviously. They go and they get the little spiel with English Bruce Willis.
Two quick things about that.
Go for it.
A, not as bad marksman as we thought. They obviously hit a fucking fuel tank and wounded Astrid in the arm.
Oh, yeah.
But she is cold as fucking ice. She's flying the microwave home. The microlite, not the microwave. And they're like, you know, yeah, this could blow up at any minute, but I'm concentrating.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, also, don't talk to me right now.
That's fucking... Yeah, that she is so badass.
She is a massive badass.
Absolutely.
But yeah, okay, so anyway, so they now chase them to the bungalow. There's been a firefight. One of the dudes buys it. And then English Bruce Willis goes, the chief of security might actually come here as well, right?
Yes.
Maybe that's later on.
That's like, is that actually, no, because what happens is that all of them buy it at the bungalow because those other guys get in the microlife and it blows up.
Oh, it blows up. Yeah, you're right.
And then they go to see Kent.
English Bruce Willis. Is that Bruce Willis? His name, Kent. Giles Kent.
Yeah, Giles Kent. That's when they get the debrief about the salamander.
And we also get the plan. And the plan, or their plan, is, Doc, you need to impersonate Salamander because you look remarkably like... The Salamander is also played by Patrick Troughton, right?
Yes.
So he needs to play Salamander in order to... At first, they say, in order to gather evidence of corruption. But then very quickly, that turns into, oh, and also... assassinate him.
Well, yeah, it's like, skip a few fucking steps. Also, they were like he wants to, you know, he wants to control the earth for his own ends. Which are, because currently they seem like feed the world.
That's my point. He's doing nothing but good so far.
I mean, unless you would like, but he also uses children as batteries or something. Exactly. Okay, we've got to get that fucking dude.
Yeah.
And then the other, my first question here, and it's a question that will keep coming up here, but let's address it right now.
Go for it.
In the VT. What do we think about the Patrick Troughton's accent as the Salamander?
Oh, he made me think of the evil lieutenant in the classic Zorro series.
Yeah.
What was his name? No, Zorro is Don Diego de la Vega or whatever. Mm. It was remarkably racist in a way.
It was just, I mean,
just
the
like
thing
insert
is, the thing
Hispanic
is,
accent here.
As the serial went on, I noticed it less and less. So that's a mark of a better accent than I guess I gave it credit for.
Definitely.
But immediately, I just burst. I had to pause it.
Yeah.
I was laughing so hard.
This is not happening. Like, is this happening? Doing? Oh, it's happening.
All right,
carry on.
You sound like a British person in the 70s that has gone to Malaga and is just absolutely just like, I can
your services, por favor.
it was awful. Anyway, so he's now, the head of security council's coming. The doc has no choice but to throw on an outfit and impersonate.
Yeah, because, and English Bruce Willis says this, if they catch you, you'll be under arrest for impersonation. But like, for what? But for looking like the guy? It's not like he has not yet. If he goes along with their plan, then he'll be impersonating him.
But
just by looking the same.
Yeah.
Oh, I'm sorry. It's not my, I was born this way.
I mean, if he starts gigging, if he starts doing after dinner circuits or club nights, then he's in trouble. Fair enough. The doctor loses his shit a little bit.
I really like that, by the way.
Be at the start of episode two that he's losing his shit.
Yeah.
But where he's coming here, and that's the end of episode one.
Donald Bruce. I've got him down as the Donald, just buys the Doc story pretty much right off the bat. Because like, he turns up, Doc is hiding away, yada, yada, yada. He like wants to kind of arrest everyone because English Bruce Willis is clearly an enemy of Salamander, of Scaramanga.
Yeah.
And then the Doctor just pops out, does his routine of like, you know, doing the Mexican accent, and bing, bam, boom, the Donald just buys it.
I've got some more questions as to how this structure works.
Go for it.
If he is, Scaramanga is trying to take over the world.
Yes,
and,
I guess.
And hitherto hasn't.
No.
So why does he get his own world security chief and the power to arrest people?
Oh, wow, I hadn't thought about that. Okay, so...
Massive plot hole number one.
Yeah, that's a huge plot hole. He's not the leader of the world yet, right?
No, I mean...
Who is he? Is he just a scientist who works for the UN? Or is he a world leader?
Well, because when he's addressing the UN, he definitely says, Mr. President. And I remember thinking, what president? Oh, the president of the UN.
I think we actually get a line of the president of the world at one point.
Oh, okay. Yeah, anyway, so I'm
Why is he just bossing around the secretary, the chief of world security?
Well, because I've got another note here. It starts in episode two, but it is a bit of a theme, and it's nobody gives Scaramanga no respect. Like, if you are quote unquote the baddest man on the planet, I feel like you could inspire a little bit more like fucking fear in your minions.
Wait, hang on. No, he Totes Malotes does that.
He really does.
He Frank Underwood's everyone.
No,
he is House of Carding absolutely all of the other politicians, and I reckon that's how he has a handle on people. Because later on we've got what's his face, the balding chap.
Yeah.
Right? Federer, I think. Roger Federer. We've got balding Roger Federer. And he is, like, basically blackmailed into taking on political responsibility and doing Scaramanga's bidding.
Well, yes, I know, but the point...
So maybe, we don't know, maybe the chief security dude is in the same boat. Because later
that,
on, he's...
That's all fine, but what I'm saying is that once you've achieved that, once you've already blackmailed people, achieved the highest office in the fucking world or whatever, got your own private police, it seems...
Yeah, oh, very much so.
I feel like someone should give you some motherfucking respect, you know, like...
Who doesn't give him respect, man?
Like, the chief guard... The chief of his security is always giving him a bit of sticks, like, why are you doing this? I deserve to know. It's like, if I was the baddest man on the planet and I employed you as my fucking security guard or overseer, I'd be like, I'll tell you what you want to be, you know, whatever the fuck I want to tell you. It's really weird.
Okay, all right.
I mean, cool. I actually think really cool, because I always hate that whole trope of I'm a super villain and everyone should be scared every time I breathe, because I don't feel like you could manage an organization like that.
I'm really glad that you brought this up, because I hadn't really considered it when... Well, I hadn't considered it at all when watching it. I think someone just didn't think about this when they wrote it. Like, they've already set him up to be a wannabe dictator, but they've written him as a dictator.
Yeah.
But then in some of the... And you're right. I mean, he shouldn't have to blackmail balding Federer, right? Federer should just do his bidding, but he still does blackmail him. So in a way, like, he's written as both, and that's a mistake. And I cannot believe the whole security thing. I haven't thought about that at all. That's insane. Why does he just direct people?
I know, right?
I mean, I think he's entitled to have, like, a security force, because he seems to be fucking minted.
Yeah,
and
he
can pay their wages. That's fine, right?
Yeah.
I mean, he even says... I mean, he hires Jamie a little bit later on, so clearly that security force, they're like his private staff, man.
It's fine to have a private army, because
okay.
I'm sure a lot of rich ass supervillains in this world already do.
Clearly.
But probably not the powers of arrest.
You wouldn't employ someone who is a world security officer.
No.
Yeah. Well, or
I mean,
chief.
Yeah, whatever.
Like, he's not in, unless he's in your pocket, which he's not. I don't know. I think it's just...
I think you're right.
I think it's poor writing. I think when creating his character, they just couldn't agree, is he already the leader of the world, or does he want to be the leader of the world?
Yeah, because when you're already the leader of the world, where's there to go?
Yeah, exactly.
And if you aren't, then why do you wield so much fucking influence?
Yeah.
Anyway.
But maybe it's that everyone respects him because of the invention.
I think that's it. I think that's what we're supposed to read into. But yes, then it doesn't really make sense as to why he has the powers of arrest.
Yeah.
I don't know why he has those.
Makes no sense. Had not thought about it. Thank you for bringing it up. That's going to shave like a decimal point off my score. So anyway, the Donald gets the SRD. We basically see the execution of the plan of, like, the rebels, the guys who are in opposition of Scaramanga's would-be / current dictatorship.
Okay, and the plan is to go to Europe,
let's split up and meet back here in 10 minutes, Trump.
They're going to Hungary.
Well, not all of them.
Or Transylvania, or Wallachia, or somewhere.
Yeah, well, it's Jamie, Victoria, and Astrid. They're going to Hungary. How?
By motherfucking rocket.
Which apparently just takes 2 hours.
Is the coolest thing so far as a mode of transport.
But yes, it is. Sadly, we don't get to see this rocket.
And I thought, pretty slow rocket.
2 hours?
I mean, rockets are really fucking fast, aren't they?
Yeah, I suppose, but...
I don't know. A rocket's that fast?
I reckon it is way faster than that, but in order to accommodate passenger comfort, it slows down upon re-entry.
So you can watch all of WALL-E.
Yeah, exactly. Well, it's like it's 2 hours because, oh, wait, hang on. You have to stand in line. You have to, like, take off your belts. You know, like, run your laptop through an X-ray.
So you're saying in this world, it is the post 9/11 world.
Yes.
Is what the Doctor Who writers are envisaging.
It's set in 2018, is it not?
It is.
I think so.
2017. Yeah.
Also, post 9/11.
Okay. So I have a note here. Black assistant.
Yeah.
Assistant. Turns out to be food.
Black
tester.
Leia.
Yeah.
And she looks exactly like Leia.
Which
I've got it down as Black Leia.
Is sort of accurate, but not as we understand it. So she's another lady that has been blackmailed.
Yeah.
Also, what's quite nice is that pretty much all, unless except for Salamander, treat her as an equal.
Yeah, and not just that. She has... This is definitely, by far, up until this point anyway, the biggest speaking part given to a non-pasty white Englishman.
And one of the most progressive roles so far with agency and, like...
And also, like, let's ignore race for a second.
I mean, for her gender as well. Like,
yeah, exactly. Yeah. I mean, we haven't had many strong female characters to this point, as in Doctor Who, but all of a sudden we're in a serial, we've got two of them, which is fantastic. Progress. Yes. And not only that, one of them is not a white English person.
Also awesome.
Also awesome.
Okay, so the plan at this point is Vijay to infiltrate and get close to Scaramanga.
Yes, exactly. Wait, hang on. We didn't say, what is Black Leia? She's Scaramanga's
food tester. That's
she like has a food taster.
I mean, actually, I like that as a writing thing. So instead of being like a slave or an assistant or an indentured...
Yeah, I agree. Whatever,
it's like, that's a pretty fucked up thing to be.
Yeah, and it's... I mean, it insinuates
And to not that, want to be.
Yeah, exactly. And it does insinuate that, you know, there are people who want to poison him. I mean, he is not the most popular man alive.
That is a good way to, A, introduce a character, and B, to flesh out the idea that he's a paranoid person living in a house of cards.
Yes, and that there is actual opposition.
Yes.
Right?
Also true. And that's some great foreshadowing that I did not pick up on.
Yeah. We do see a little bit of the Donalds talking to this fucking weasel, this guy who's like the head of a research center. Yeah. And to this research center, the only reason I'm bringing it up is because the doctor and who else was it? Oh, English Kent, Bruce Willis.
Yeah.
Yeah. They are going to this research center. Anyway, so we see Donald and this guy. This guy, by the way, did anything strike you about this guy? For me, it was that his eyes are so incredibly close together.
I did not spot that.
I feel really bad for saying this, but I mean, I've got him down as Cyclops in my notes. They are so close. Anyway, so... Oh, wait, hang on. Can we talk about Salamander's volcano simile? Because it's fucking amazing.
Absolutely. I know. Yeah, that was my note. My note is volcanoes and supervillains go hand in hand.
Yeah, well, his simile is... He's talking about... I may be paraphrasing this, but he says, a volcano is like a man sleeping in the sun, silent. Then boom, he wakes full of energy.
Yeah, that's exactly... he's completely still. It's like, that dude's dead, man. Like,
how long has he been out in the sun? He's got a crust. Okay, so... All right, let's talk about Federer. You were going to make a point about him.
Well, I was just going to make the point that they're all talking about the, you know, Scaramanga. Actually, Scaramanga is... predicting in Danish, who is the controller of this zone, that there will be loads of volcanoes, there'll be loads of people dead and whatever.
Yeah.
And I just thought, and on my note, before even knowing that Scaramanga, which, you know, obviously is painfully obvious that he's at the bottom of these volcanoes.
Pun intended.
Ha ha ha. It's like supervillains and volcanoes go hand in hand.
Yeah.
Another Bond.
Another Bond trope.
Yeah, absolutely.
Maybe this is just a 60s thing.
Very possibly. Bond was very, very popular.
Okay, so do we have Scaramanga blackmailing Federer now, or is that later? Is that later?
Yeah.
Okay, so bing, bam, boom, anyway, now I'm pretty sure that Jamie turns up.
Yes, this is the master plan. Which is fantastic. Also, I've got another note here. Future police look like dickheads.
Oh, because of their actual helmets.
Their helmets? What's up with that gun? We've seen normal guns at this point.
Well, they've got like blunderbusses.
Yeah, but I mean, we saw a Luger. Like,
yeah.
What?
Yeah, but the Luger did shit.
Oh, exactly.
It did nothing. Now you've got a blunderbuss. Everyone has one of these things.
Does anyone actually fire?
Yes, once.
Once.
Yeah.
More Crockery gets fucked up.
They kill Black Leia with the blunderbuss.
Oh, yeah, that's sad.
And also, okay, so when we're not there yet, but like when they kill her, when they shoot her with this massive rifle, there's no blood, there's nothing like that. It feels like it's that as opposed to the Luger is actually like an energy weapon or something like that.
Yeah.
Right?
Like a solar weapon. Like a solar weapon.
Or maybe that's what... Oh, that would be awesome.
Yeah,
right?
Not really explained. But they look like dickheads and everyone else looks fresh as fuck. Like, Scaramanga looks amazingly racistly Spanish.
Oh, yes.
He looks like a fucking matador.
He looks exactly like a matador. He's wearing the whole... I mean, all he's missing is a red thingy, like a red... What do you call it?
I don't know, man.
You know the thing that you trick the bull with?
I'm only an amateur bullfighter. They won't give me one.
Okay, so whatever. Yeah, Jamie turns up. Jason Statham's one of the guards. And then like... Oh, wait. And then throws something? Oh, he throws the phone away. And the phone blows up, right?
Yes, so basically...
he's in touch with Astrid. Astrid has, like, the detonator.
Yeah, basically, Jamie scales the wall.
Yeah.
Kills the guard?
No, I...
Disables the guard.
Yeah.
And then looks like he then shoots someone that may or may not be... an attempt on
him. No.
Oh, no, throws the phone. Sorry,
he throws the phone. The phone blows up because Astrid has, like, Sorry, Astrid has like a detonator.
Yeah.
When she sees that he throws it, boom, she presses a button and it blows up. So I've got a question for you. Was this phone constantly on the balcony?
Why not just murder?
Why not? Exactly.
In fact, he says, I was just using that phone.
So. Exactly, that's exactly what he says. And that phone blows up. So why, if their final goal, ultimately they want him dead, why not just press a button? They clearly infiltrated the place anyway because they planted a fucking explosive phone on his balcony.
Yeah, well, I wasn't watching this quite as carefully, this portion, I guess, because I had a thought that he just threw the phone and Astrid blew up something else. Jamie was charged with jumping on, throwing something away, and acting as if it was a bomb, and the explosion would intimate that it was a bomb.
That makes perfect sense.
That's better, right?
I think that's way better. If that's not what happened, that's what should have happened.
I'm pretty sure that's what at least that's what I took from it first.
Oh, okay.
Okay, so Jamie then says, I heard some people talking, and they were going to kill you, and blah, blah. And
he didn't say who was plotting to kill him, right?
No, you think you'd want more details.
Yeah, but that's actually not what Scaramanga takes from this. He basically just goes,
you're hired.
You're hired. That's it. You got a job, kid.
Job with me for life. Also, your biddy, she can come too.
Yeah, well, not just that. You just threw away my phone. Security experts. You have a partner. Is your partner a girl? Cook's assistants.
Oh, my days.
Okay, so anyway, Jamie now goes away, talks to Victoria and Astrid, and... For those of you who haven't seen it, I don't know if you thought the same about this scene as I did, Nick. I feel like this is some of the worst acting that Victoria has produced hitherto. Because she basically takes a spit take. Like, she looks over at Jamie, then goes, oh, I'm probably looking way too soon, aren't I? Looks over directly into the camera, mouths something, then looks back in Jamie's direction, and they kept the cut.
Yeah, pretty bad.
Well, my next note is, so there's a volcano in the middle of Hungary.
Many. Many, apparently, and they're all about to go off.
Yeah.
Possibly.
Well, I think it goes off now, doesn't it?
Oh, yes, it goes off. Well, we get some really shitty VT of just walls falling over. Walls, I think, are like...
I thought it was pretty cool.
It looks like Mount Etna.
It's actual volcanic footage.
Yeah, it looks like Mount Etna or Naples or some shit in the, like, post-war.
Well, yeah.
Yeah.
Post-war, post-also invention of... TV grades video cameras.
Yeah, quite.
but not just that. There's like a bit of... There's a shot of a street where smoke is pummeling out of holes in the ground and from windows and stuff. I think it looks pretty good.
Mm. So... At this juncture, because Salamander had predicted it and Dennis did nothing about it, he's arrested.
He's arrested.
Yeah.
ASAP. And
which, again, how have you got the power? Who else is around? Surely the structure that put you or given you all jobs might be... The UN might have something to say.
Do you think that he's actually not bossing the security chief around, but that he's just planting fake evidence in order to manipulate him to arrest people? So, for example, he has, I think around about this time, he does actually do the blackmailing of Roger Federer.
Yeah,
and on top of that, he's also, spoiler alert, set off a fucking volcano in the middle of Hungary.
That is true, because, I mean, the head of Security Council just looks like he wants to do a fucking good job at being a security council guy, or whatever his title is. Because he's always like, why won't you tell me the things that will help me keep you safe? It's kind of my job. Why won't you do this? Who's this fucking guy? Why are you hanging out with this guy?
I think that's exactly... I don't think he's bossing him around at all. I think he's just so incredibly good at manipulating people. He's got them doing his bidding without giving them any orders.
Sure.
Did we talk about the whole Frank Underwooding of Roger Federer?
We didn't. Not in detail.
I don't know if it's true or if he's just invented something, but he basically has a file on this Federin, is his actual name, and says, if you don't do exactly as I say, I will release this to the public. Kind of an important plot point, because later on that file is going to reappear on a number of occasions.
Yes, I don't know what he could be embezzling. He's like, I think my family, my friends. Like,
yeah.
How bad could it be, dude? I mean, compared to being complicit in genocide.
Oh, tons of shit.
he
didn't do his taxes.
Yeah.
He's got a computer full of downloaded movies.
Late parking fine. What's the deal? Okay.
All right. I think this is pretty much end of episode 2, start of episode 3.
So my first note here, and I don't know what order this happens in, but the fucking cook is hilarious.
Oh, that's exactly... my please, can we talk about the kitchen?
Oh, my God. He's the funniest character hitherto in all of Doctor Who. intentionally funny.
I think I might agree with you on that one. He's so like so sarcastic and wry and dry and just misanthropic.
Oh, really?
And he hates his job.
Do you know what he is? He's proto Marvin the Depressed Robot.
Oh, yeah.
Paranoid Android. When was that written?
Later, I think. When was Hitchhiker's Guide written? I'm going to say 70s.
Hitchhikers was written in 1978.
Kablamo!
The original work.
There you go.
So, yeah, proto...
Yeah.
proto Marvin the Angry Robot, or whatever his name.
Yeah, he's also wearing a future apron.
Yes. He is wearing a future apron. Also, I loved the interview technique to give Victoria a job. All right, design a menu. Yeah. Well, we'll have a starter, and then there'll be several more courses.
Good work. Written this down. She knows fuck all about food. He says, give us a menu, and she says, bread, soup, meat, pudding. That's it.
Yeah.
No detail.
Oh, yes, that is a menu.
what kind of bread? What kind of soup? What kind of meat? How are you going to cook this? What are you going to do? What kind of pudding?
Yeah.
No detail whatsoever. But she gets the job. And then as he leaves the room, he goes, write down the menu.
Fucking funny, though. I really enjoy it.
Yeah, it's pretty good. Shall we now cut to English Bruce Willis having his kitchen demolished by the Cyclops and his henchmen?
Absolutely. So yeah. Salamander's right-hand man, Snivelly Magoo.
Is this Cyclops?
He is, yeah, super fucking snivelly, isn't he?
I dislike him.
And a really good actor.
He makes me think of Hiss from the Disney Robin Hood.
Yeah, that's a good show. So anyway, we're in Kent's caravan.
Exactly.
Because that's what it is. It's a mobile thing and it's
he's hiding with the doctor. Yeah. And he gets doctor like hide inside I guess a sofa.
Yeah.
Yeah, pretty much.
And so he's like, we can make things uncomfortable for you.
Yeah.
And he orders the policeman to just smash up his crockery. The butt of his gun.
English Bruce Willis goes, you can't make me leave here. And like Snivelly Magoo doesn't even tell the henchman, do this. He just goes, hey, you, do it. And he just breaks everything, including like breaking a plate that has already fallen to the floor, like extra stamping on it or whatever.
Which obviously means that they've pre-planned this before they got into the caravan. Yeah. Like, one, I'm going to nod at you and you're going to fuck up his mugs.
Yeah, screw up every piece of porcelain in that home.
Get a good china.
After which, Cyclops goes, there's not much point in you staying here now, is there? Oh, yeah, because, like, what am I going to eat off? You're going to have to eat off your hands. You have no more plates.
Do you know how to eat soup like that? You'd look ridiculous. Just the most ineffectual intimidation ever.
So good. Cut to Roger Federer and, I mean, this is several cuts later, but Roger Federer and Scaramanga are now talking about poison. That's my next one. Do you have anything before that?
No, not necessarily. I think that's the next big plot point that he's... So Federer has now begun, you know, sort of de facto...
Sided with
like, Scaramanga. Okay, now you need to poison him. It's like, can't we make one of the henchmen do it? Like, why do you want your... now head of this very important region to also be complicit in murder, keep him squeaky clean and make one of the fucking help do it.
Yeah, makes absolutely no sense whatsoever. But it's not just that. It doesn't pan out. It doesn't pay off. He gives Federer this salt. Mm. Well, he gives him these like poisonous crystals. They look sort of like salt, I suppose. Mm. Federer stops Victoria as she's bringing food to Danish.
Danish, I like that.
Goes, you forgot the salt. Replaces the salt with the poison, but does he eat any salt? No.
No, he doesn't replace the salt with the poison. He just takes the salt for an excuse to get rid of. I was watching him quite carefully here. So he took the salt,
Victoria to run off.
And then I had thought that he'd poisoned him.
What, poisoned the food?
Poisoned the food.
I thought he poisoned the salt.
No, I thought he'd poisoned the food. And then we later get quite a protracted scene of Danish eating his steak.
He does, yes.
You know.
But...
And at that point, I thought, oh, well, poor fucking dude, he's done now.
Yeah,
and
but then he gets fucking shot. Danish gets shot.
Eventually.
He doesn't
but
get poisoned.
Here's the thing. He gets... The cutscene, the next point, like note I have, is that, you know, Federer as a human couldn't accomplish the task of murdering this innocent guy. So he goes back and says to Scaramanga, I couldn't do it. And Scaramanga's like, you know what? You win some, you lose some.
Yeah.
Don't worry. You know, you miss 100% of the shots you don't take.
Yeah. So, Nick, does Scaramanga give him a second chance?
Well, he says so, but then he gives him a drink. And I've got down as my note, don't drink stuff from a man who poisons people.
Yeah.
And is scared of being poisoned. Basically, if poison makes a big, appearance in your life, probably just don't go around for dinner.
Yeah, exactly.
make it an excuse.
But also, he just promoted him. He just made him, head of a zone or whatever it was, right?
Yeah.
He's, now head of the European zone or the Central European zone. And fine, he hasn't committed murder for you, but it's only been 5 minutes. Maybe don't poison him. Maybe let him do the job that you've just promoted him to do.
No, he murders him, right? And then, so the guard comes in and says, stuff is happening.
Yeah. What happened to Roger Federer? He's like, oh, obviously a suicide.
Yeah. It's like, oh, yep, nothing more to investigate here.
This has happened before, clearly.
So many questions.
So we have this ill-thought-out plan to break out Danish, because Astrid, he didn't mention this, Astrid has also infiltrated the compound now, and she's now about to break out Danish.
Yeah.
With her compatriots, Jamie and Victoria. But there's this incredibly abrupt cut. They start running.
Incredibly abrupt.
Incredibly abrupt. They start running. Boom. Danish is shot in the back. Cut two. Victoria and Jamie are arrested, but we don't know what happened to Astrid.
Which is quite clearly some fuck up. There was supposed to be more
something
scene
there. Yeah, something in production definitely happened, right?
Awful. So Danish is dead, and they've been captured.
And that's pretty much it,
pretty
I think.
Much
we end on Scaramanga and the Donald going to the research center. That's my last note.
Yeah, yeah, I think that's it.
All right, end of part three. Part four.
So episode four.
Bing bong.
So we're Salamander. We've not really touched on what the fuck the Doc has been doing at this point, which is really just been wrangling with Kent.
Yeah, pretty much.
Wrangle, wrangle, wrangle. Oh, you want to kill him? I don't want to kill him. You want to kill him, but I don't want to. Oh, my emotion.
But now and even after all of the crockery was destroyed, the Doctor still goes well, he's clearly a bad guy, but is he evil?
Yeah. And, here's a quick chat. Here's a quick question. Do you reckon Patrick Troughton got two checks?
He definitely got paid more, right?
He put a fuckload of effort into this.
Yeah,
this
he serial. Did. He must have got paid more. He was he had separate credits for some of the episodes.
Yeah, I reckon that's cash.
So in one case, he was the Doctor / Scaramanga. In one, he was the Doctor and Scaramanga. In one, he was the Doctor, separate credit, Scaramanga, which I reckon that's double billing, that's double pay.
Yeah, I think so.
Maybe that is the reason why the credits are different. Maybe he negotiated something mid-serial, dudes, I'm doing fucking two jobs here, man. You got to pay me more.
I hope so. I hope his agent fucking sorted that out.
Yeah. He did a very good job.
All right, so...
By the way, his son is in this as well.
Oh.
Yeah.
Is that overacting Colin?
No.
Oh.
No, you wish, right?
Yeah.
No, it's David Troughton or Daniel Troughton. He plays one of the guards.
Oh, okay, cool. Yeah. Nice.
Anyway,
so... nepotism.
We're in part four, and this is where Black Leia joins Team Astrid.
Team Astrid. Because, Black Leia hates the guy.
Yeah. And she's like, hey, listen up, Astrid and friends, Scaramanga, Frank Underwood and everyone, and here's the file on Roger Federer.
Including me.
Including me.
Which I was kind of what the fuck is everyone doing in 2017? Are you all embezzling from the Red Cross? What could be worse?
Do we find out what she did?
No, no.
What has he got on her?
Again, she said something that was very similar to what Roger Federer got up to.
Oh, really?
Yeah, it's
embezzlement.
Oh, yeah, some shit like that. Oh, I did some things, I was corrupted, or something like that. And it was kind of but you know that what you are is essentially a human shield. A human... So you could die at any point through sort of this weird forced suicide type of deal by checking this guy's food. And that's better than what you did?
Apparently so.
What did you do?
And then all of a sudden, Kablamatron, Cyclops, turns up with a bunch of gods.
Yeah.
And there's literally a dude by the window. And they're scaling walls. They're outside with blunderbusses. And it's insane. So Black Leia and the Doc, they go into a garbage chute, I think, and escape.
Yeah.
And Astrid stays in the building, or in the room, hiding behind a desk because no one can see that. Yeah, exactly. So here's another question for you. Now Cyclops is ordering guards around. Who is Cyclops?
Who are these guards?
These guards are the people who work... I think these are the guards who work for Scaramanga.
And Bennick is his number two.
Who the fuck is Bennick?
That's Cyclops.
Oh, sorry.
We called him Cyclops. That's his name.
So anyway, so we have this massive action set piece. Mm. It's insane. You know what it is? It's like Captain America and what's his face, the dude with the metal arm, like escaping from the raid building.
Well described.
Well, have you seen the new Captain America?
I have. Yes.
Yeah, it's exactly like that scene, but lower budget. And then
but more dynamic.
More dynamic. We look out the window, and also I made a note of this. Among all of these characters, we have only ever, across six episodes, we only ever get to see one extra. And it's in this shot, we see a lady with a pram walking past a bunch of guards. And I was 100% totes malotes sure that she would somehow factor into the plot. Like maybe Black Astrid would play the lady and the doctor would sit in the pram or something. Like either way, like they would dress up or something. Like she would factor in. They'd put the Roger Federer file in the pram or whatever. But no. No, we just get one random extra across six episodes.
I did not notice that at all.
Okay, fine.
Okay, like, let's
yada, yada, yada. Yeah. Black Leia is killed.
Yeah, yeah. Faria gets killed.
And Cyclops takes the Roger Federer file.
Well, actually, before we skip over Faria getting killed, she has quite a good death scene where she's like, you can't intimidate me now.
Well, is it really? Yeah, her death is great, but is the intimidation really good? It's like, I've shot you. I will shoot you if you don't tell me everything.
Well, yes, exactly. But I like the way, you know, I don't know. It seemed good to me.
You seem to be dying painfully. I will end your suffering right now unless you tell me everything. Mm. Shazamatron. Now Cyclops has the Roger Federer file.
Yes.
And then then I think we cut to Scaramanga taking Val Kilmer's lift from Batman Forever down to the record room.
That's exactly. I've got talk about Salamander's weird coffin tube transport system to the record room.
Which is so good.
Which actually, when it came out, I'm just like, that's a big gun. Because it was pointing out the way.
I did. Okay, sorry. So what are the different theories that went through your mind when you saw this?
Immediately, it was like, oh, that's his earthquake volcano ray.
Yeah, okay, right? So exactly. That's number one. That was number one for me as well. Then he climbs into it, and I thought something very different.
I thought he'd be like his massive mechanized suit immediately. I just thought he's going to turn into some badass transformer.
Oh, interesting. I thought like, oh, wait, hang on. He's going in there to recharge because maybe he's like Robotron.
He's an Oh, I didn't even think of that. That'd have been cool.
Right? But then the whole thing turns out to be a lift, and it goes down forever.
I don't really understand why it had to be horizontal and then vertical.
Oh, it looks badass, man.
Oh, yeah, fair enough.
Yeah. Panache.
But yeah, his weird coffin tube transport system, like his weird, like... That was kind of cool.
It was so cool.
And actually very well acted. Because he's like moving around in there, like under the G-force, the implied G-force, when he's quite clearly just standing still.
Just standing there. But then it stops very abruptly.
Yeah, doesn't
like,
it?
Yeah, it stops so abruptly. You'd think that he'd be squashed into the shoes. But like, he goes down forever, right? I mean, it takes a long while.
That is super cool. And instead of finding Chuds...
But wait. He goes down miles and miles, right? Mm. Put a pin in that, please.
Okay.
Okay. So, yeah, what's your next note? Because, holy fuck.
Well, my next note is, head of security is a good guy.
Oh, really? Oh, interesting. My next note is, what the shit? There's a subplot that's basically Kusturica's underground.
Yes, well, I was building to that. But that is one of the best twists of anything. Because I thought what this would be is a very linear, evil man has evil machine.
Yeah.
Points at an evil thing, demands $1 billion, and then, you know, and holds the world ransom or becomes a dictator, whatever, and they stop him by stopping the machine. Very Bond, exactly. Very whatever.
But instead, in part four of six, they introduce a completely separate story, which on its own could have been a serial.
Which is the set of the grooviest subterranean...
Everyone wears PJs.
Oh, and they're so... I hope that whoever's listening from the BBC merch the shit out of those pajamas, because I ain't buying those.
I want them
in
as well.
Triplicate. That was so amazing. So he is an entirely different savior to an entirely different set of people.
Yeah. For entirely different reasons.
For entirely different. How amazing is that? The fucking character was so cool that actually his motives were even more complex than just being the dictator of the world.
Yeah.
He's like this serial con man, but on the most epic of scales.
Well, it is. Have you seen Underground?
I have not.
By Kusuricha, the same director who did Black Cat, White Cat, and Arizona Dreams, and Life of the Gypsies. Time of the Gypsies? Time of the Gypsies, I think.
All right, Bohemian Leon.
No, it's he's a fantastic director. But there's a film called Underground, in which I want to say politician, but like mayor or something like that, has tricked a bunch of people that war is still going on the surface. Everyone's in a bunker, and they're in there for like 20, 30 years or something, and every now and then he pops around with, like, here's food I found. Turns out, Scaramanga's doing exactly the same thing in this one. So very possibly Kusturica ripped off this Troughton cereal.
See, what I had in my head was a very different, probably much more contemporary film with Brendan Fraser again.
Oh, right. Which is... hang on. Let's see how contemporary... I know exactly the one you're thinking.
What's that film called?
With...
Lissy Silverstone?
Oh, maybe. Wait. Don't I be it yet. I want to see Christopher Walken plays his dad.
Yes.
And they dance in the bunker, right?
And it's really, really fucking good.
It is. But it's like one of the few Brendan Fraser films that I really enjoy.
But another one where his father mistakenly thinks that there's a nuclear war, and they live in a bunker for 30-odd years. And
yeah, exactly.
But it's slightly different, obviously.
Sure. Well, that's from the mid-90s, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, Kusturica's Underground, it's 94 or 95.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Big rash of...
there you go.
Of bunker films.
Bunker movies.
When did The Hole come out? Anyway.
There's a whole other thing going on here. And apparently he's tricked all these people. There are like 20 people down there?
I love that he's a double messiah. I love that. That is such a cool... I've never known any fucking... story like this for you to be playing both sides, and in both sides you're essentially Jesus.
Yeah, exactly. Well done, buddy.
That is so awesome.
So he's tricked these 20 people somehow. I mean, I think we really need to talk about how he tricked them, because that is not discussed in this serial. But he has tricked them into believing that there's been a nuclear holocaust above grounds.
Yes.
Everything's like crazy irradiated.
Yeah.
You wouldn't survive there for 5 seconds,
except
him.
For him.
Yeah, for no reason whatsoever. And every now and then he brings food in, which apparently is not irradiated, and they have to stay there.
That's not how radiation works.
Really?
Nope, that's exactly how it works.
Yeah,
everything's fucked.
For a second there, I thought, like, oh shit, I'm an idiot.
No.
But no, he's their savior in that he's the only one who will, like, he won't permit anyone else to subject themselves to the radiation. But in exchange for the food, he wants them to create volcanoes and earthquakes and all kinds of, like, natural disasters up top as a war against the people he normally claims are not there.
Well, this thing... Hitherto, he said they're not there.
But why does he want them to make all these disasters?
I have literally no idea.
He says in order to combat the enemies of justice and truth.
Does he say that?
I think he says something exactly along those lines. So he's also, that's also like a not incredibly well-written story.
I mean, awesome.
Oh, such a good idea.
So awesome.
Amazing idea.
Just round off the edges, sand above.
Exactly.
He must have been, whoever was writing this was just pressed for time.
Probably. if he just had a little bit more time. What we should do is, when we're done with this, let's check who directed this and who wrote this.
Yeah.
Pin for us for later. Bing bong, Future Ponkin here. Guess what? We forgot to address this pin. The Enemy of the World was written by David Whittaker. Now, David Whittaker is a name that we have encountered before on Who Back When, and indeed in Classic Who. David Whittaker... Let's tease this a little bit. So David Whittaker started as the very first script editor on Doctor Who, meaning he was the script editor for An Unearthly Child, the very, very first Doctor Who story ever, which is pretty serious shit. I'm pretty sure you'll agree with me. Next up, though, he's written a number of serials, and they start with, wait for it, The Edge of Destruction... Overly complicated, and I think anyone who listens to Who Back When knows how I feel about that one. Also, The Rescue, which is kind of pants. The Crusade, which is amazing. The Power of the Daleks, which I liked. The Evil of the Daleks, which I also liked. The Enemy of the World, which is this one. The Wheel in Space, legendary serial, haven't seen it yet though. And, last but not least, The Ambassadors of Death. And I wonder if maybe the overly elaborate and complex ambitions that he had with Edge of Destruction, or that he failed to realize in Edge of Destruction, as in like that level of elaborate plots, maybe that's what they actually succeeded to do here. Obviously, the stories are very different, but Enemy of the World, and this serial is like crazy complex, and maybe that's a thing. Maybe that's David Whittaker's shtick. Well done, David Whittaker. Can I call you Dave? Well done, Dave. Okay, back to the show. Bing bong. But yeah, anyway, so we are introduced to three characters in particular. One is Captain PJ, who's like the head of the whatever.
He's the sort of second in command.
Yeah.
Behind Scaramanga.
Is his name? Yeah. Captain PJ. And then there are two youngsters.
Overacting Colin.
Overacting Colin. Oh,
I really wanted to come up with a snappier name for him. I really wanted to come up with a
snappier
name.
If there was furniture underground, I'd be chewing it.
But he was specifically overacting Colin. Now, what is fucking this? I want to go above ground. I need to feel things.
I want to see the sky and have the sun shine upon my face.
Yes. I do not care for radiation.
But also, like, he starts off by talking to, like, his girlfriend or whatever, whose name escapes me right now. Kelly?
Something.
Let's call it Kelly.
Yeah. Incidental Kelly.
Incidental Kelly, who has really no part in this whatsoever.
No.
But he's talking to her about how it's absolutely impossible to go above ground because you would die within minutes. Scaramanga turns up, goes, "Good news, everybody." And he goes, "Are we going back upstairs?" "No, did you hear yourself speaking a moment ago? No, everything is dead up there."
Okay, so do you know how I would remedy this writing loophole?
Explain.
That if I could come up with a convoluted way that the earthquakes and the seismic activity and the volcanoes were somehow cleaning the earth of its radiation. So here's opposite of a fun fact. But after the atomic bomb in Hiroshima, a typhoon came a couple of months later and basically washed all the radiation out to sea.
Oh, wow.
Right? So
maybe that's what they could be doing then.
Yeah, yeah. That would have been a better... I mean, if it wasn't their intention, that could have been a
agreed.
Cool writing.
That would definitely work. But that's not how it's presented here. It's presented as though they are soldiers in a war, in a post-war...
War.
Basically. I mean, it was the nuclear war, right? Mm. The war ended, it's still totally irradiated up above ground, so you can't survive up there.
Yeah.
But they still need to wage this secret war on the survivors.
Well, let's I mean,
fuck
the order. Fuck the order for a second, because I really need to get into this.
Okay, go for it.
So, Captain Peacock finds, like, a bit of newspaper in Scaramanga's latest offerings.
Yeah.
In the milk crate, or whatever.
Yeah,
like,
meat.
Here is
meat.
Milk. Here is meat. Like, cheers, dude.
But it's very kosher. They've separated those two.
Quite. And it was like one box each. What's that going to last us? Like a fortnight? There's 20 fucking people. Anyway. So he gets this. And what does the scrap of paper say?
Oh, wait. Hang on. It says something like luxury liner, cruise liner disaster or something like that.
Something like that. Like, how can there be luxury liners?
You said that there were no survivors above ground, but now people are going on holidays?
And now they're less than human, they're subhuman. It's like, but they still organized themselves enough to build and maintain a luxury liner?
Scaramanga's attempt at getting out of this pickle is amazing, because he's like, yes, I guess I did sort of lie to you. Mutated into these weird blobs of flesh.
I think I've got it verbatim.
Evil.
I've got it verbatim.
Okay, go for it.
Maybe even not verbatim. It's like, in a way, I have lied to you.
Like, in a way?
In every conceptual way you
and
have
also,
lied to these
people. If you've lied to them, you've lied to them. If you've lied to them in a way,
I love that. If ever I get caught doing some heinous shit, I'm just like, in a way. I may have murdered those people.
But not in every way, necessarily.
But if you look at it with a hat on your head... That's fucking brilliant.
Well, if you're going to be nitpicky, I guess I did kill him.
And I was like, yeah, they're just like a horrible feral race of human human garbage monsters.
Who still take cruises.
who still love Club Med. You know, they still love a good 18 to 14 holiday. They love the Spanish Riviera.
So anyway, now Captain PJ's, he has now convinced Scaramanga to let him go above ground.
Well, because actually, in a really compassionate way, he's saying that, well, they're still people and we're causing earthquakes and volcanoes.
Yeah, exactly. Aren't we hurting them and so on and so forth? And Scaramanga's like, no, they're evil blobs of flesh.
It's like, well, let's go. I need to see them before I can be complicit in this, which is cool.
Yeah, yeah. No, I'm completely down with that. Mm. So anyway...
I'm still laughing in a way.
Okay, so they've now decided to go upstairs, but we cut to... I'm pretty sure this is the end of the episodes. Troughton, he's getting like a minimalist makeover to look more like himself, as in... more like Scaramanga.
Yes,
as someone steps in. We don't know who it is, and that's the cliffhanger of part four.
Well, yes, and I think hitherto we're supposed to, you know, we've missed out on what's going on above ground. and everyone's perplexed as to why Scaramanga has locked himself away in the records room.
Because that's why every now and then he does lock himself in the records room, and
you can't get in. No, there's no way of.
There are only two people with access to the records room: it's Scaramanga and Cyclops.
Yeah,
Cyclops has like the emergency key.
Yeah,
and that's it. But
Cyclops actually. Bennett says at one point, even if I wanted to, I couldn't. It only unlocks from the inside.
Oh right.
Mm.
But later on, or very soon, like in part five or possibly start of six, Troughton as Scaramanga tells Cyclops, "Oh silly me, I forgot the key inside. I accidentally locked them in there."
Mm.
And Cyclops goes, "It's fine, I'm going to use the emergency key."
Oh, okay.
Right?
I don't know.
Well, either way, there are only two keys to this place, but sure. Cyclops doesn't know that in there, there's also like this secret compartment that leads down to the Valkilmer chute.
No one knows other than Scaramanga.
As far as we know, so far.
So far. Oh, yes, so far.
By the way, did you notice that Jamie and Victoria did not appear in this episode at all?
I did not.
They did not. And the reason for that is that they both went on holiday.
Together?
Actual trivia. Probably not together.
Probably together. Probably together.
They probably didn't even leave Jamie's pad.
Yeah.
Just spent a week boning. But yeah.
Painting the town tartan. Boom goes the dynamite.
All right, part five. Turns out the feet belong to the Donald.
Oh, yeah.
At which point, I think we can start what's... if you watch this, you can start what Miriam definitely pointed out as we watched this morning, namely the salamander drinking game. Because they say salamander in every freaking sentence.
I've got to tell you, if you name your kid, and I know this is his last name because his full name is Ramon
Salamander.
Mm. But I feel like if your family name is Salamander, you're going into the evil business, aren't you?
Yeah.
You are just, you're just contract evilers. You go over here, you do some evil, you go over there, you do some evil.
I don't know, you could be a reptile-themed superhero. A vigilante. No,
definitely villain. I feel like the Salamander would be a villain. I feel like the Spider-Man would go out and kill the salamander.
Spiders traditionally not, like, good guys, but Spider-Man, a good guy. So salamanders, traditionally not good guys? Salamander Man even rolls off the tongue. Salamander Man.
Not to be confused with Salad Man. Or Santander Man.
What? <I don't> All right. Okay, anyway, Doc convinces the Donald to also join Team Jodhpur.
Mm. The other thing I forgot. We said we'd mention more costumes here.
Yeah.
But all the police people, the security staff, are dressed resplendently in leather.
Oh, God, yeah.
In the smoothest Eddie Murphy-style leather.
Yes, exactly. Exactly. In fact, even Jamie gets one of those kits.
Yeah, he does. He looks good.
He looks so badass.
Yeah.
That may need to be the next Comic Con outfit.
I look forward to a future that is wiped clean.
All right. Okay, what happens now? The Donald has joined Team Jodhpur. We, at some point, there's a soldier pointing a gun at Astrid and the Doc. I cannot remember where it is, but my only note there is these soldiers are the worst because Astrid just pushes the soldier aside and takes his blunderbuss, and then the two of them just run off.
Yep.
But I can't remember who it is that, like, why have they been arrested? Where are they arrested? When are they arrested?
I can't remember. I definitely remember a portion where Salamander is subterranean and the Doc shows up pretending to be him.
Oh, I know what you're thinking of. Do you mean when the Doctor pretends to be Scaramanga in front of Victoria and Jamie?
Yes.
And the Donald. The Donald is also there. That's right. He pretends to be Scaramanga so that DJ go, holy fuck, but the Doctor's a good guy and Scaramanga's a total nozzle. And then the Donald goes, oh, well, now I believe you. Right?
Yeah.
So, something along those lines. Like, Jamie's about to hit Scaramanga over the head, but then turns out Scaramanga's actually the Doctor.
Yeah.
And that's how the Donald comes to trust them.
And so they enlist the Donald.
Yeah, well, he's already been enlisted. This is what I've been talking about, man.
Oh, fuck, okay.
My next note is that Astrid and English Bruce Willis pretend that Bruce Willis has been shot by putting some gloopy barf on his forehead.
Yes, they do. It's been such good prop work up till now.
Yeah, up until now.
They spunked all their money on that microlight and our fucking hovercraft.
Maybe this is where Astrid just pushes the soldier away and takes his blunderbuss and runs off. And maybe it's not Astrid and the Doctor. Maybe it's Astrid and English Bruce Willis.
Yeah, that might
be. I think that might be it. Whatever. Yada, 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 yada. Swan. Who's Swan again? Oh, Captain PJ.
Captain PJ.
He's
Captain
now
Peacock.
Peacock. Peacock? Why Peacock?
Oh, Captain Peacock is a character.
Oh, he's that show. You've mentioned this on the on Who Back When.
Are You Being Served? Which was popular, I think, at this time.
Right. Yeah, I remember you and Drew, or you and Rory, yeah, maybe, talking about this. Yeah. Okay, anyway, so Captain Peacock, a.k.a. Swan, they've now gone through a tunnel to get up above ground.
Mm.
So let's go back to that pin where we saw the lift descend miles and miles and miles. And now, instead of climbing up, they horizontally travel through a tunnel and end up above ground.
Do you know what? Weirdly, when I was watching this, I don't know if my brain just refactors things that are written shoddily into something that might be slightly better, but that they took the lift to a higher bit and then escaped through a tunnel.
Oh, right. So there's like a stop in between somewhere.
Something like that. Something to that effect, that you can take the you know, the coffin tube to...
Okay.
That's why I had. Not that they walked up from wherever they were, because actually they'd all fucking walk up from wherever they were, whatever they felt like it.
Yeah.
It had to be more difficult than that.
Yeah. Okay, fine. Fine. Well, either way, they are above ground, though, because Scaramanga hits Swan over the head with a pipe, and then end of episode 5, episode 6, Astrid finds Captain PJ above ground, like in a field or whatever.
Yes.
So this is
and
not like
not
halfway
told.
Up. This is above ground.
This is above ground. We're not, you know, it's again, it's another abrupt cut. And I had to go back. It's like, shit, did I miss something? Did I miss the bit where this all happens and stuff? But
No, you missed nothing.
I missed nothing.
They didn't go up.
Exactly. So he's in a field and he's screaming for help, which I also thought was odd because... He is still under the impression he's in a world full of murderous nuclear monsters.
Yeah, but he's very quickly turned around.
Yeah.
Because he sees Astrid, who is very, very far from like a massive blob of flesh.
I get that, but he's screaming help before he sees her.
Oh, I see what you're saying. Like, who would help is you? He soliciting help from?
Mm.
Yeah. But yeah, okay, so fine. So Astrid turns up and he's like, oh, holy shit, but the war, how? When did it end or something along those lines? And Astrid's like, there was no war. One thing leads to another. Now he knows that about the whole Kusturica subplot. Astrid knows that, oh, wait, hang on, there's some shifty shit going on nearby. And then also, again, off screen, he dies.
Yeah, shit.
He just dies. Because she bounds off towards the lift, and later on, when she arrives, she goes, oh, yeah, Swan's dead. Wait, what? Did you see him die? Did he die in your arms? Did you kill him? Like, what?
Is he just needing some urgent medical attention and you just left?
Yeah. Are you just assuming that he died because you did not intervene?
Well, anyway, she goes down to the subterranean idiots and rescues them.
Doesn't really rescue them.
Sort of rescues them.
Well, that's one of my questions later on, but we'll get to it when we get to it. That's really like the end of the show. But, I mean, she goes there, she basically reveals the subplot to the subterraneans. Subplot.
For Scaramanga, subterfuge.
Subterfuge.
Subterranean subterfuge.
Nice.
Subterfuge.
But, okay, so she tells the Kustarichans about the whole subplot, about yada, 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 there's been a war, fine, oh, God. So there's that bullshit radiation meter.
Yeah.
Which is fake.
Which is just a nice... It was a sensor that makes
you go... Yeah, so anything that goes in...
I thought that was kind of cool.
I thought that was kind of cool, but I also thought, like, wouldn't someone have noticed this at some point?
Why would you not calibrate it with something? Or why wouldn't you check the milk? Or, like...
Yeah, exactly. Like, at no point... They've been down there for 5 years. No one's ever been tempted to step into this radiation meter. Like, just out of boredom. Like, oh, what are we going to do? Let's just go in here.
Yeah. I mean, you gotta service your microlite every year. You think the radiation check would get a little looky-loo.
My next note here, I don't remember anything about. I remember when it happens. I remember how it's said, but I don't really remember what it means. Password... Redhead.
Yes, I do know. I know exactly what I sort of know. It's the head of the Security Council.
Yes, the Donald.
And he's like, go to a guy, tell him the password is redhead. He'll know what to do. It's like, we legit.
To do what?
Your password is redhead.
Oh, is like, that your wife?
Yeah. It's like, the password. Like, what the fuck is that in this exchange? Pretty funny. But I think the idea is that he's like the Scaramanga's been compromised, or you know, something to that effect.
Oh, I see.
Like a
there's a code
plan.
For yeah, exactly.
Operation 66.
Yes. Operation 66?
Star Wars.
Operation 66 in Star Wars?
Yeah, where they kill all the Jedi.
Oh, you're talking prequels?
Well, canon.
Shit, man.
Just deal. Ugh. Just deal.
Anakin?
Whatever, man.
No, sorry. Okay. Fine, I'll deal. Oh, right. So then we get another massive plot twist. Because English Bruce Willis, he suddenly holds Scaramanga at gunpoint and sort of reveals that he's been in on the plan all the time. But it turns out English Bruce Willis is actually, not only is he to blame, but also Scaramanga is not Scaramanga. He is the Dockmeister.
This cereal has more twists than a fucking pretzel.
Yes, it does. You got it in there. Well done.
Yeah, it did.
That almost made it into the intro.
I did not see the Kent thing coming.
Nor I. Not at all. I mean, I don't think that it was ever written to be that way.
Wasn't it?
I don't think so.
No, I think actually because there is a point much... that's why he's so afraid of the poison. That's why he's, he's saying about loyalty. That's why, all of that stuff is actually a big foreshadowing to Kent.
Wait, how? When? He's afraid of...
There was another note I made.
Oh, you mean Scaramanga's fear of poisoning.
Yeah, and all of that stuff is all about Kent. And those...
Sure, that makes sense.
Also, those that were there, were below that never came back. Kent's one of them.
No.
No?
No, Kent was not one of them. Kent was... Doesn't Kent say something like, he and Scaramanga built the bomb shelter, and they put people in there for some sort of test?
Yes, well, I think that Kent was down there with them.
Oh, really?
Like Scaramanga was like, okay, we're both going up now, and Kent didn't come back. Scaramanga came back to be the messiah to prop up this whole regime, and then
maybe
Kent got cut out.
I may be misremembering this, but I thought that Scaramanga and Kent put the others in the place. Not that Kent was one of the others, not that he was one of the PJs.
No, I don't think he was one of the PJs, but he was one of the orchestrators.
Oh, yeah, no, exactly. Yeah, sorry.
But,
that's
but
exactly
the PJs
what I mean.
Think he's one of the PJs, is what I'm trying to say.
Oh, maybe, yeah. Well, regardless, Doc turns out, as in Scaramanga turns out to actually be the Doc, so now... We know English Bruce Willis is a massive turd.
Yeah.
And we cut to the Kustarichans down below, looking at a video of the lift ascending from multiple angles. Why is there a camera? Why are there multiple cameras depicting how the lift goes up?
Security.
Security?
Security.
So I was going to say, maybe they could never check the radiation meter thingy because it's actually behind a door, like a locked door.
Sure.
As in the entrance where the lift goes down and where the radiation thing is, it's all behind a locked door so that no one is ever tempted to take the lift up. As in Scaramanga locks it, right?
Right.
But if he locks it, then why is there a camera? Why are there multiple cameras depicting the lift? Because no one's ever going to look at that. Or either way, this is a secret bunker. You should film as little as possible anyway.
Yes.
Pretty much.
Absolutely.
But okay, fine. Scaramanga pops up now as well, along with Astrid and, I want to say, Overacting Colin and his girlfriend. Of no consequence.
Incidental Karen. Or whatever we
Kelly?
Call it. Kelly.
Incidental Kelly. Kerry Kelly, whatever. Scaramanga shoots English Bruce Willis in the shoulder.
Yep.
And then plays actual Scaramanga in the mines. Like, we get basically the end of Man with a Golden Gun.
Yes.
It's almost as though Knick Knack is going to turn up at some point. Like, here's your Tabasco.
Pretty much.
But, so he's walking around there and then totes Steven Seagal's English Bruce Willis.
Okay. Re-say that sentence without action heroes.
Salamander... completely kills. In a way, Salamander kills.
In a way.
Kent.
I fucking love that.
But, actually, sorry, he doesn't kill him. He shoots him. He's dying, at which point English Bruce Willis goes, well, fuck you, dude. You forgot that I know about all the explosives in here. And then he sets one of them off and just blows the place sky high.
Yeah.
Yeah, okay,
so
carry on.
We're thinking that everyone's dead. Everyone's bought it. That's evil.
Yes. Yeah, exactly. But not just that. Yeah. Like, what about the people downstairs?
Oh, quick thing.
Yeah.
Danish.
Yeah.
Danish fame.
Yeah.
Was he complicit? Because at some point, Kent said in the early days, Danish is one of the only people we can trust, and they tried rescuing him. Scaramanga's trying to kill him. Is Danish one of the third fucking
maybe, because Danish goes, or Dennis, whatever. Dennis goes, you don't intimidate me. I look forward to standing trial and speaking against Scaramanga.
Yeah.
So Dennis slash Danish slash Danish.
Yeah.
Which I guess is a Hungarian name. Danish sounds very Hungarian. I don't speak Hungarian. Might be. Mm. Maybe you're right. Maybe he knows shit about Scaramanga. And he's like, well, this is like going to be my opportunity to reveal all of that.
I think he's one. I think the three of them put the whole fucking people in the ground.
Oh,
right.
I like it.
That's why, because all of them die and we're not needing to feel sad about it. Because essentially, yeah, they're three Joseph Fritzls.
Yeah, basically. The Kusturicians downstairs, they even say everyone who's gone upstairs with Scaramanga has... not a single one of the people who've gone upstairs with Scaramanga has come back.
And I think it's these people.
Maybe it is those
two. And they've created this new world order on the back of their subterranean idiots.
Which is so weird, though.
Mm.
I mean, how did it start? They put these people in there, and then at some point Scaramanga tells... You know, he tells English Bruce Willis and Dennis, dudes, should we just leave them there?
I think it's slowly.
It's not slowly, because it must have happened very... I mean, they're down there for a test. I'm assuming that there was already some sort of international conflict going on, so that they could then say, oh, that conflict has now escalated. It's turned into all-out nuclear war.
Well, there was...
You have to stay here.
There quite clearly was. At least when this is being written.
Yeah.
It's the freaking Cold War. It's the middle of the Cold War.
No. Because we are now in 2017.
Yeah, you know, but when it's written, so...
Oh, when it's written,
the
yeah.
The idea that... I think that's...
Oh, so
the
you mean like, oh, the Cold War has continued up until and including 2012.
Exactly.
And in 2012, they go downstairs and, yeah, he just goes, well, it now suddenly went from cold to hot.
Yeah, because they'd been down there for 5 years, haven't they?
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
All right, whatever.
So one thing leads to another. Everyone's dead.
Sort of.
So we see, in a way,
English Bruce Willis is dead.
And we're in the TARDIS.
Yeah, exactly. Fuck it. Wait, hang on. Wait. Before we get to the TARDIS, because the TARDIS is the very end, before we round off this serial, Astrid is in the records room with, like, a bunch of, I guess, guards? And she says, what about the people downstairs? Somehow we're going to get to them, but the lift is broken and the tunnel that leads down there has been completely filled.
And they approximately have 36 hours worth of food.
Yeah, exactly. They have no food. Maybe they have some sort of weird oxygen replenishing machine. We don't know. But certainly in terms of food, they were relying on whatever one man could carry downstairs every now and then.
Yeah.
So, I mean, they're clearly all going to die, right?
Clearly.
All right. Anyway, that's what I wanted to say. Cut to the end of it. Go for it.
So this is an amazingly gorgeous scene where Troughton, in all his Troughton glory, is in the TARDIS, mute, and looking pretty fucked up.
Yeah.
Jamie Victoria.
Is he also wearing the exact same clothes that fake Scaramanga, real Doctor, was wearing before?
Yes, because both of them wearing identical clothes.
Yeah.
It's entirely plausible
that
that's the Doctor. In fact, I had to, your first few seconds, I had to maybe think to myself, which character is this?
Oh, I totally knew it was Scaramanga.
Well, no, I think I did for after, like, you know, he didn't respond. But, you know, the first second or so when you see him.
Sure.
You know. Anyway, the VJs take this as writ as that this is the Doctor and he's going to fly the TARDIS away.
Yeah.
And
then all of a sudden,
the Doctor gestures at some of the controls and Jamie reluctantly...
Well, I thought you said we should never touch the controls, at which point we hear Troughton's voice in the background. That's right, Jamie, that's exactly what I told you. Reveal, real Troughton is in, or real Doctor is in there, wearing the Doctor's uniform, not the Scaramanga clothing.
Mm.
So somehow he's now changed back into his standard suit and bow tie.
Yeah. Okay, couple things.
Yeah.
Scaramanga.
Not at all impressed.
Not at all fazed by the interdimensional space-time
exactly
vessel.
What I was going to say. Exactly what I was going to say.
What the actual fuck? I know that you've seen some shit in your time.
Yeah, but this pretty much tops all
of it,
right?
Being the messiah of both an underground and overground people, wombling free.
Yeah. But this should blow your mind.
This should... You should have... You should just, like... You know, there's something. Yeah. Rather than just like, I'm going to jack this shit.
And what do you think this shit is? What do you think you can do
Where do
with
you
it?
Think you're going?
Yeah, what's happening
Are
now?
You just in a big telephone box? Like, are you just in the world's plushest Airbnb? You don't know where you are.
There's absolutely no reaction on his part whatsoever. And when the doctor actually reveals himself, rather than go like, it was you, what the fuck are you? Are you an alien? What is this? Why is this place bigger on the insides? What is this? He just goes, well, I mean, you impersonated me. I figured I'd give it a go as well.
So I wild guess. As fuck.
Right. Or, you know what? Maybe just not very observant.
That is how a Bond villain would react to that situation.
No, maybe it was just like, it was dark outside.
No.
He goes inside.
A Bond villain would just like immediately be comfortable with the situation. Like, oh, right, you can travel in time. Cool, I want in.
But he doesn't know that it's a time machine.
No, he doesn't know. But
he knows nothing
like,
about this.
He's just a stone cold killer. He just doesn't care. but anyways, we get a face to face Troughton.
Yeah,
actually, first we get a, what was it? Did we get
do
that?
We have both faces on screen
at
the same time?
Yeah, we do. And then we get a bit of fight scene.
Oh yes,
Scaramanga
we do. We
fucks him up.
Yeah. And either they bump into the controls, or maybe Scaramanga pulls a lever or something. The TARDIS starts to wobble. The doors are still open, and Scaramanga flies out into what I assume is the time vortex.
Yes, or
like
a very,
the void, or
a
something.
Very sparkly curtain.
Yes,
yeah,
sure. But I mean,
it's the entrance to the champagne room, if you know what I mean.
He is no longer on Earth, no, either way, right? He is somewhere. He is between dimensions, or he is in the vortex. He is wherever in space, maybe.
He did.
End of The Enemy of the World.
What a fucking roller coaster.
Reviews.
Yeah, let's do that.
Reviews.
So, I fucking love the shit out of this cereal. This was the best cereal of
Same
classic
that I've
experienced so far. I don't know. I just... This had everything, right? There were so many times. The characters are amazing. The female characters are particularly great. Two of them, you know, minus Victoria... everyone had agency. Scaramanga, you know, the Salamander was like a double villain. Yeah. Like these two plots, and they merged well.
Hmm.
Obviously, we uncovered some plot points, some plot holes, some fairly big ones.
Sure.
Or some poor writing. But that doesn't take too much away from my enjoyment. I think that was still pretty cool. I wish fucking knew who would do something as ambitious as this, as complicated as this. That was cool.
Do you think that... sorry to interrupt your mini here, but do you think that New Who kind of does that, except that since this is a serial, and New Who now is episode by episode, I mean, this serial is de facto the length of three New Who episodes. Do you think that in some of the mini arcs, or even some of the major arcs of New Who, we do get plot twists of this sort?
I don't think to this degree. I think that we get so much in the way of hints as to what the twist could be or what, you know. Yeah. Nothing's ever as shocking as the subterranean. When I saw the subterranean bit, like the people in the group, I was just like, what the fuck is this?
Exactly.
This is so awesome. Who are you? What have you got to do? Like, this, and what, we were like three episodes in at this point?
Four, I think.
Yeah, right. And
this is in episode
and
four.
And in a story arc of two or three episodes, you know, two episodes, obviously, in New Who, don't get writing like that.
No, that's true. We don't really... I'm trying to think of like what the major twists of New Who have been that have stuck with me. They've been like maybe the heads inside the, what are they called? The things that fly around? The master,
yeah,
I think, somehow controls that. I can't remember.
Anyways, I think all of that was great. The plot holes I can really excuse, you know, even the complicatedness. I did get lost a little while, you know, a couple of times in there.
Yeah.
As to, what the fuck are these guys doing? What the volcanoes? What's the new world order? All of that. Love a good dystopia. Bought it all, though. I was hook, line, and sinker. I really enjoyed this. So, I'm giving this an incredibly strong 4.5.
Wow. All right. That's a great rating. Okay. So, what I'm going to say is, I can echo everything that you've said, but I will add a couple of things as well. I think in terms of production value, they did a fantastic job on Future Fashion, which definitely worthy of a couple of decimal points. I think... comparing this to, like, I sort of have to compare this to The Massacre of St. Bartholomew's Eve, and I think Troughton's Scaramanga blunderbusses Hartnell's Abbot of Amboise out of the water. It is fantastic. His double performance is amazing, and he's so good as Scaramanga as well. The Emir Kusturica subplot, I've added that in my notes. The Emir Kusturica subplot is freaking amazeballs because it is. It's insane. When it happened, it was like, no. This immediately turned into an even better episode than it already was. Or Serial. I mean, so fantastic. Obviously, all the twists, great, great, great. I can pretty much only give positive feedback. The only negatives that I would give are, I think Victoria was completely pointless in this. Jamie is amazing, but Victoria is just... I mean, if you compare her to the other female characters of this serial, to Astrid and... What is her name again?
Faria.
Faria, thank you. If you compare Victoria to them, God, does she pale. And the second negative would be that the serial ends very abruptly. I would have liked to have seen some sort of resolution to what happens to the people down below, right? That would have been pretty good. Aside from that, I think this is fantastic. I don't even mind the plot holes. I'm giving this, and I have written this beforehand, a 4.4.
Wow, I just seen on Leon's phone that he wrote a 4.4 in ahead of time, and I'm got a little Sammy.
Yeah. Listener minis. Shall we sneak a peek at some listener minis?
Let's.
And let's do this in chronological order because we got one on Twitter.
We did. Approximately a week before we recorded, so I had to avert my eyes a little.
So maybe not in chronological order, but let's start with that one.
Yeah. So this is a new Classic Who reviewer, Mark Dunn. At M Dunn 1. Understand he's a long-time listener and listens to us while digging your allotment. So, nice. Hey, Mark. So this is a real mini, and I think he goes to his point. He says, so, I won't spoil it for you, but here are some things to watch out for. Two strong female characters whose gender is entirely irrelevant to the plot.
Very true.
Yep. Although Astrid is clearly channeling Pussy Galore.
And I think that initial Astrid may have been less impactful had she been portrayed by the dude who plays English Bruce Willis. Number two, he says, Jamie and Victoria catching Virgin Galactic from Brisbane to Transylvania off screen.
Fully yep. Awesome, fully awesome. Jamie getting hired as a bodyguard with no background check. Head of security is frankly useless.
Yep. Number four, deceived scientists wearing psychedelic pajamas.
Number five, trying to force someone to leave his home by smashing his crockery so he has nothing to eat off.
Which is great.
Absolutely.
And number six, a fine turn by Patrick Troughton as Salamander, the Doctor's evil twin from Mexico.
all great points. And
he has given this a score...
of 7 out of 10.
Yeah.
Because that was my fault. I asked him to rate it out of 10.
Which translates as a 3.5 out of 5.
Yeah.
Mark, thank you so much for tweeting us your mini. That was awesome.
Who else do we have on the roster? So again, two maxi reviews. We're gonna, as always, maybe pick a few of our favorite points, but you'll be able to learn to read
because these are absolutely enormous.
Actually, you'll be able to read them in their entirety
on whobagwhen.com. And you may actually, in fact, be listening to us on this page right now, so just scroll down. This first one comes from Trenton Bless.
Hey, Trenton, how you doing?
Hello, Trenton.
Trenton has the obvious, obligatory and wonderful fact file, and I encourage you all to read this, but we're going
to
read
it. You have to.
There's
a little bit of overlap with what we've talked about here, actually.
A little, but some other fun things that you might...
Oh, my God, the dude knows his who.
Absolutely. So I'm going to start off with this excerpt. This is Patrick Troughton's showcase. Much as I dislike the preposterous notion of doppelgangers, namely the massacre, this is the USP of the enemy of the world. It almost goes without saying that Troughton excels himself. He's fully in character as the Doctor, paddling with glee in a Victorian bathing suit, being enigmatic with Astrid about his doctorate, taking the moral high ground and refusing to help Kent until episode 5. He's almost completely convincing as a sinister salamander, with darker complexion hair and a neat parting and an unwavering Mexican accent. The Doctor deduces Salamander is from the Yucatan.
All very true. I'm going to say that. All very true. Trenton's maxi review is 50% pros, 50% cons. And I'm going to pick a paragraph from the con category. He goes, there are, however, still multiple problems with this serial. For example, it purports to be a political thriller and is far from thrilling. It's written on a grandish scale to which the budget cannot stretch, so we're left with tracts of dull, repetitive dialogue. Action switches abruptly from Australia to Hungary, then back again, but we never really get the sense it's set in either. Which is a very good point, because did they go back? I don't remember that. Anyway, he goes on. Caravans may have been the in thing in the late 60s, but a tedious amount of time is spent in Giles Kent's tiny trailer on the outskirts of a research centre. And are we seriously expected to believe salamanders, subterranean dwellers down under, can set off volcanoes in Hungary?
please. Yeah, I buy that, actually. I totally buy that they're able to do that.
I fully buy that. I don't understand plate tectonics or mantle or anything, so I feel like it's like reflexology. If you tick on my toe, maybe you can clear my kidney or like...
It was super far down as well. Maybe they're like right smack in the middle, man.
I basically don't know enough about seismology to make a... Or volcanology to make a...
But yeah, okay, fair points. Okay. Rounding off his review, Trenton says, overall, I would give the serial a 2.95 out of 5. This serial is far from perfect, but the story was a nice breather from the usual monsters and such. Nice change-up, I'm sure fans in 1967 didn't expect at all. Wow.
Wow. It's not often that I disagree with Trenton Blake.
Yeah, nor I.
Yeah, but I was sure you were going to love this one, Trenton.
Yes, I thought so as well. I mean, Trenton is Trenton's favorite doctor, and as he says, this is his showcase. This is Trenton's time to shine. What an episode.
Two paychecks.
Yeah.
Thanks, Trenton.
Trenton, thank you very much for your maxi review. Ladies and gentlemen, read it in full on whobackwhen.com. And while you're at it, follow him on Twitter. He is at Trenton Bless. That's Bless with two S's. Thanks, Trenton.
Okay, another maxi review from SGamer82.
Steven.
How you doing, Stephen?
Hey, man.
So another couple of excerpts. The first thing that really occurred to me while watching The Enemy of the World is that despite the future outfits and the over-large ray guns, the serial did not feel like a sci-fi story.
Super good point.
As contradictory as it sounds, the relatively mundane setting actually put me in the mind of a historical serial set in the future. A sci-fi feel of any kind didn't kick in until Salamander entered the ball wall room. Nice.
Balls to the wall. Wall-to-wall balls.
Ball wall room, and we saw the underground lair that was a con job.
Yeah, yeah. Absolutely. Super good point.
Super spot on.
I have to agree with that. Mm. It's not really a sci-fi story.
No, not... I saw it more of a dystopia than a sci-fi, if one can make that distinction.
Yeah, sure. I'm going to jump to the end here. Stephen goes, I really enjoyed the serial and feel it deserves a 4.4. Oh. That's right, motherfuckers. My only true complaint is that of all the things to be the spanner in Salamander's works, it was not the Doctor, but rather a random newspaper clipping that slipped into the fake base's food supplies. Unless I missed something, that seemed to come out of nowhere and seems like a weird oversight to make in an otherwise meticulous-seeming plan. That just seemed a bit too random plot device to move the story along for my liking.
That is true. Actually, I felt that at the time. Yeah. Maybe didn't articulate it.
Wow, that is sloppy. Sloppy Scaramanga. Yeah. Very sloppy.
And then finally, Steve makes two great observations.
Yeah.
Do you want to start us off with that one, the first one?
Yeah, sure. Okay, observation number one. The first is when Jamie and Victoria wake up captive in the research center and Bennick is on the other side of the door, just as Jamie tries to leave. What I have to ask is, how long was Bennick standing outside of that door just so he could have had that entrance?
A really long time.
Very long time. He's like, oh, is he waiting? No, okay, no, I'm going to wait. I'm going to stay here a little bit longer. Just a little bit longer.
Just starts practicing. Okay. And then the second is the final scene in which Jamie and Victoria mistake Salamander for the Doctor. He never talks until the Doctor himself shows up, and it occurred to me that there's a very simple reason for that. As far as I remember, he never heard the Doctor speak, so he didn't know what he was supposed to sound like. That is a genius point, because I had not picked up on that. I just assumed his accent was too thick or something like that.
Yeah, exactly. Like, oh, he can't do an English accent.
Yeah, but if that's true, and maybe I need to watch it back to verify, that is some fucking genius spots.
Yeah, and I reckon even if you do watch this back, you'll just find that S-Game was right.
I imagine so.
Well done, man.
Yeah.
Ladies and gentlemen, you need to high-five S-Gamer Steven, the Steve-meister, Steve-a-Rooney, on Twitter. Tell him what an awesome observation that was. He is at S-Gamer82. That is 82, the number. Thank you, Steven.
Thanks, Steve.
Bing bong, Future Ponkin here. We actually got another mini-review as well. We try to record on Wednesdays or Thursdays, and then I drop an episode every Sunday. It is now Sunday afternoon. I was literally about to drop this episode when this came in, and I figured, why not Future Ponkin it? This one comes from Peter Zed. It's a fairly mini, so I'm just going to read it in its entirety. Peter says, there's a certain feel about this production that almost makes it earn the label of the first John Pertwee production. It really feels less like a Doctor Who story and more like The Avengers or something similar. With no insult or compliment to anyone, there's much of this that to me feels like a Hollywood production of the time. We could be watching some Cary Grant or Abbott and Costello movie, mind episode 3's reference to Jekyll and Hyde, with such unique characters stealing the scene from each other. It's a very different feel than anything that has come before, will come again for yet a while. What indeed can be said of Patrick Troughton flexing his acting prowess here? He's simply overwhelming. The two characters hold nothing in common, from their stance to their reactions. It's all different and believable. People spend so much time making nice things only for others to come along and break them, he quotes. On top of that, he says, he adds a third personality that uniquely blends the two characters. That's three characters, and you can instantly tell when each of them is on the camera. Truly brilliant. Let's not stop there, though. The Cook's short time on camera is a show-stealing performance. Could not agree more. He quotes, the firing squad would miss me. Ugh, I'm terrible. The world is a better place for me not being an actor. Anyway, he goes on. Jamie steps up his game, playing the loyal guard well, and Victoria is alternately brave and out of place, each at just the right moments. Yeah, I'm not sure I agree about Victoria there, but yeah, I'll take that. I'll take that. Peter goes on. On the downside, there are tons of mistakes in the corners of the camera, from boom mics popping in, to doors and people moving around in the background when someone is supposed to be alone. There's also one major jump cut during the foiled rescue attempt, not the kind where someone shifts position, more like the film ran out so they cut the scene early. This isn't recon related either, it's a production problem, and I would have liked to have heard the story behind it. Yeah, that makes two of us. As fast-paced as this story is, there are stretches with little happening but dialogue, and the maneuvering and intrigue during these moments is not always enough to keep the level of interest on overdrive. There's also a guard who hates crockery. Kent must be British because they feel that if all the teacups are smashed, then he has no reason to stay in the RV. And there were dishes for 20, but only 3 could comfortably sit in that camper, and what were they going to eat? There was no food in there. Perhaps that's why there were no dirty dishes. I find the plot twist halfway through brings the story to a whole new level. Perhaps though some of it should have been there at the beginning to add some depth. This week's posthumous script revision goes to teasing the underground. I was not a fan of this episode watching the Tellus Nows, but my opinion of the story grew immensely now that all the footage is back. Much of that is due to the actors. First, and perhaps half an episode too long, but I find this a great story, and he gives this 4.0. Yes, definitely a fair rating. Awesome, Mini. And just as a comment to you, you said that, well, you start this off by saying that it feels sort of like the first John Pertwee production. The guy who directed this, and I say this having literally just Googled this, the guy who directed this, Barry Letts, was in fact the producer of Doctor Who during John Pertwee's time as the Doc. So, yeah, that might be the vibe that you're getting. Very interesting, I think. Thank you so much for sending in your mini review, Peter. Next time, just send it in before a Sunday. Give it up for Peter Zed, everybody. Thanks. Bing bong. Nick Meister, can people follow you on Twitter?
They can. It's at NIKULELE. At Nikulele.
Well, that sounds very much like ukulele, but, you know, with Nick.
Sort of.
Yeah, sort of. You can follow me on Twitter as well. I am at Ponkin. Here's a soundbite of JD, seeing how you spell that.
P-O-N-K-E-N, Ponkin.
Thanks, JD. Thank you so much for listening to us, ladies and gentlemen. Next up, we have a new Who review.
42.
That's
and then
right.
Next classic will be...
The Web of Fear.
And our next audio Who will be...
Oh, The
Late.
Scapegoat.
Late is what it'll be.
Late, you're right. Thank you so much for listening. Be rad and excellent to each other. Rock on and cha-chow.
Bye.
Blammo! Did you enjoy the show? Then please do what the cosmos compels you to and spread the gospel of Who Back When. Tell your friends. Don't have any friends? No problemo. Tell some strangers. Like us on Facebook. That's facebook.com/WhoBackWhen. All in one word. Are you on Google Plus? Then find us on Google Plus. That's plus Who Back When. And when you do, tell us why you're on Google Plus. Who Back When just got its very own Twitter account. No lie. So give us a follow. You guessed it. That's at Who Back When. All in one word. Check us out on SoundCloud, vote us up on Reddit, listen to us on Stitcher, and head on over to our website, whobackwhen.com, where you can leave a comment, submit a review of your own, and peruse our visual index of aliens, monsters, and more, which increases in kablamos with every episode. And lastly, give us a rating and review on iTunes. Not only would it make us super chuffed, and it really, really would, but as thanks, we will transmigrate your iTunes nom de plume into the credit list of trailers for fake Doctor Who audiobooks produced by Who Back When. Have a poke around our bonus episodes to make more sense of that. That's it. Rock on and be rad and excellent to each other. Catch your earballs in our next Classic Who Review, New Who Review, or, still funny, Audio Who Review. Cha-chow.
Who Back When?